Kay, long time no say. How are you?
Happy pandemic to you, sir.
Thank you for wishing me a happy pandemic. What's new, dude?
Nothing usual.
Just kind of. Nobody has any news anymore.
No.
Where'd you go? Nowhere. Yeah, what'd you do? Nothing.
Nothing. Any go anywhere? Any travels? Anybody? No.
Thank goodness for games.
That's right.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be.
So seriously, what's put up to you? Tell me some news. I need something. I need anything.
It's hot in Canada. Mm. Yeah. I mean, most people don't know it gets that way. So yeah. Just letting you know, okay. As an American,
good to know.
That it gets warm up here.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's a thing we do. We call it summer and everything.
Nice.
Just like a real country.
Cool. I don't even have that much news. It's the weather's beautiful and...
And so are you.
And nobody cares. Yes, indeed. Cool. So, well, you want to talk about Station Fall then? Or let's read some mail. We got letters.
Oh, we get letters.
We get letters. Stacks and sacks of letters. Letters! That's my throwback David Letterman reference.
Is that where that's from?
No one will get. Yeah.
It seemed familiar when you would say it, but I wasn't sure if it was a reference or just like, you know, sounded like you.
Yeah, me, KB&K, right?
That's just KB&K, man. You got to let K be K. We did get letters. Oh, in fact, I think I even copied a few into my show notes.
You are
look at
smart.
Me being an all professional podcaster.
Cool.
Andrew Stevens, he wrote us an email. He said, hi. And then he said more stuff on top of that, but he started with
Andrew, how are you doing?
I listened with amusement to your episode on Scavenge last night. Oh, Scavenge. On Scavenge last night. I enjoyed it immensely, for it brought back pleasant memories of creating my own elaborate text adventures for the Apple II when I was a teenager. Sadly, or perhaps it is for the best, both Creepy Castle and Space Hero are now long lost to the world. From memory, they were more technically proficient than Scavenge, but lacked that style, which makes Scavenge still amusing to play. I can't stop calling it Scavenge. For the record, thank you. And you are in a position to. For the record, I think your game's tactic of allowing the player to progress past an obstacle merely by possessing the object required is a fantastic innovation. The teenage purist in me from long ago would have decried it as cheap, but your game is much better for it. Nobody wants to type unlock door with green key when the solution is obvious. Like you, I also drank deeply from the well that is Hitchhikers, and Space Hero was filled with homages to Adam's style. But unlike you, mine were not funny. Anyway, thanks for sharing. Excellent. Good nice. Email, Andrew.
Yes.
Thank God. Scavenge.
Yeah, we haven't actually recorded a full episode with mail for a long time. We've got a lot of mail here.
Because we didn't do mail for...
For Scavenge, no.
Oh, my gosh. Probably should have gone even back farther.
Yeah, well, Dan Boris said, I just listened to your episode about Planetfall. I remember playing this game on my Atari 800 when growing up, and it was definitely one of my favorite Infocom games, and I believe one of only two that I actually bought. I remember playing this with two of my friends. One of us would sit at the keyboard typing commands and reading the responses, and the other would help solve the puzzles. While we were reading the phonetic language that was used in the game, I was imagining what my parents would think if they heard us, probably wondering why we were all suddenly struggling with the English language. You mentioned on the podcast, people send you their maps. I was so into the game back then that I took this a step further and created a book that not only showed the maps, but other details described in the game. I've scanned it and uploaded it to archive.org, and he sent us a lovely link to that. And have you seen this? He drew.
He drew. It's fantastic.
He drew like the planet Reseda, just like a planet picture, and then like the orbits of the planet around its sun, and like, yeah, crazy, like not even like Infocom maps, just like fantasy maps of like countries and things, and it's beautiful.
I can completely relate. I used to do the same sort of thing when I was young, and even like I played the game for the first time for our podcast, and I got really into the world of that game. So if I had played it when I was a teenager, I would have been all about it as well. I would have been probably making fan fiction or definitely setting like a Dungeons and Dragons campaign in it or something. So I would have reacted the exact same way, and I thought his stuff was fantastic.
It's really cool. So I'll put a link in the show notes because it's worth looking at.
Yep.
Very cool. Read me that one.
I'm going to read you two, mm-hmm. because we got two, in fact, a couple, but more than that, I think, but two, I'm going to read two that are related from Wouter DeWall. He wrote, AKA Planetfall. I started playing Planetfall after I downloaded the podcast, but finished it before listening to the podcast because I only listen in the car, and with lockdown, the car gets about 3 months to the tank these days. I did play and finish, but no idea whether with all the points, Planetfall back in the 80s, and I liked it then, and I like it now. But the red herrings, my oh my. Pro, it's consistent, unlike Starcross, or a game I wanted to like but didn't, Leather Goddesses of Phobos. I mean, LGOP could have just changed the names of the objects to fit within the general settings. Anyway, Planetfall, everything fits. I finished it with 60-ish points, and I didn't realize this specific puzzle that led to the end game, so I was still battling one puzzle and knew I had to go back to fetch some stuff to finish the other, and finished it for real last night. I would have liked it if they had docked me a point for losing the multi-purpose brush along the way. It would have been better, in my opinion, if you had to finish with the brush still in your possession to get all the points. Brush it from the very beginning of the game. And he says, I agree on the BS of spoilery thing at the end, so I don't want to talk about that. It says, con, learn by death. Way too much of that, especially not being allowed to sleep in the obvious places in the second area. Bugs, and then he wrote some spoilery bug dealing with the sleep counter in the elevator. But anyway, he concludes with this. Anyway, I think it's a great game for the era, pre-Nelson's Bill of Rights. I didn't mind the eating thing so much or the sleeping thing. The inventory management was a pain indeed. This is the one game where I think I shall go find the source code and look through it to see what I've missed. Station Fall up next. Never played that. And then he says, you guys are going to love Lurking Horror, or you should. If you don't, you are wrong. Then he wrote us a second email that says, we hates Steve Moretzky. So, and I don't know if that is because he played Station Fall. And so I in my mind, it was Station Fall's next. And then he played Station Fall. And he wrote, we hate Steve Moretzky. Just a little heartbreaking thing. And we will get into the discussion of this game. But I thought it was great. Yes,
do we? I'm writing this down to later discussion. Do we hate Steve Moretzky?
Do yes we hate no? Steve Moretzky? But I thought it was just fantastic to get those two emails. The one really long with all these details. And then a bit of a pause. And then just, I hate that guy. Totally made me laugh. I thought it was great feedback.
Nice.
So what do you got?
What do I got? I think I have so much here. I don't know. Still starving in modern Planetfall, says Keith M. Fisher. We talked about the modernized version of Planetfall.
That's right. Yeah, where they, I think, I haven't played it, but isn't the modern version where they cut out some of the stuff that people wouldn't like in like current things, like the whole idea of being starving and locking yourself out of a game where
right
you can't win.
Having what they call walking deaths, right?
Yes, yeah, so oh, the walking deaths.
Yeah, you're dead, but you don't know it. He said...
he said threateningly.
Yes, yeah, right. Keith Fisher said, just a heads up, playing the modern Planetfall mentioned in the podcast, I'm still starving to death. That's how Moretzky just... He just keeps at you. He doesn't care. Moretzky don't care.
That's how Moretzky plays.
I can't seem to find a way to contact the developer, Steve McRae. The game also crashes when entering the bathrooms in the dorm area. So not a fan, apparently, of the modern version. He says, I play the Infocom games on my Mac via the command line version of Frotz, often whilst in Zoom work meetings the past few weeks. My. I'm going to tell your boss about that, Keith P. Fisher.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he is the boss.
Maybe. Oh, could be.
If I was the boss, that's all I would do.
You are the boss.
I am the boss. And, you know, honestly, sometimes that is all I do. okay, we had feedback before about somebody who made crazy good art and drawings based on the game. We got another similar sort of email from Adam. It says, "Dear Kay and Carrington, I have been thoroughly enjoying Eden by a Groove since episode one, being a longtime Infocom and IF fan. I've been playing adventure games since getting hooked on Zork 1 and The Hobbit as a child back in the early 80s. In the years since then, I've written my own games, none finished or published, my own adventure game authoring systems, one finished, usable, but nothing to write home about, and even a Zed Machine interpreter ports. I ported Frots onto Microsoft's now discontinued Windows RT operating system in the form of Frots 8, still available on the Windows Store for Windows 10. But enough about that. I wanted to write about your A Mind Forever Voyaging episode, which I'm listening to at the moment. I'm a little behind due to COVID-19, canceling my travel to work for the last 4 months, resulting in very little podcast listening.
We're getting a lot of that.
I don't have time to listen to your podcast because I don't have to go to work. Yeah, okay.
Your work is listening to our podcast, you listeners. Get in your car and just drive around the block. I can't actually complain because I also am way behind on podcasts and audiobooks and stuff, which I still call books on tape for some reason, because I'm old. That is the reason, in case you're wondering what the reason is.
You're listening on like reel-to-reel though, right?
Oh, obviously, yeah. I have a massive reel-to-reel thing in the back of my truck. It just leans back. Anyway, he says, "You mentioned that you didn't have a complete map of the game. Back in the 90s, I was an obsessive IF mapper, and I completed a full map of Rockville, South Dakota, back in 1997. You can still find a copy of the map in the IF archives just here, and he gave us a link, so I will put that link in the show notes. And it's great because it's, well, anyway, he's about to describe it. This was all created in hand in deluxe paint back on my Amiga 1200. I think it's complete and accurate, although the email address shown there is long since defunct. And as an aside, it totally is. When you look at this, this is clearly a map done on like a period computer, and I love it all the more because of that. Like when you look at it, I'm like, yes, this is a good type of map to use for an old game. Totally love it. Anyway, he concludes to say, I thought you might find this interesting, particularly if you haven't seen the full layout in all its splendor. It really is huge. After a quick scan of the locations, I think I counted 139 of them just in one single time period. I wasn't all that impressed with the game at the time. I was after puzzles, and it left me disappointed. With over 20 years between then and now, I'm very tempted to give it another try and play it with the mindset it deserves. Thanks for bringing this game and its memories back to me after all these years. Keep up the great work." Thank you very much, Adam. I like your map very much, and I think you should. My advice is, yes, go play A Mind Forever Voyaging. It's one of the best ones we played. I love it. It's stayed with me since then.
I feel like we're like a little kid's like preschool show. This is like Adam sent in his picture. Look at, you know.
I see Becky. And Judy and Martin. Did you, was that a Canadian thing or is that a US as well?
That
you
was
get,
US
like Romper
well.
Room?
Romper okay. Room. Yeah. My cousin was on that.
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I think I've told you this before.
They never even said, like, believe me, there's never I see Carrington. Or those, you'd go into stores and there would be little license plates with kids' names. Sure. There was never Carrington's. No. What my dad did was he got, they would sometimes call him Carrie, which I don't like, but whatever, spelled C-A-R-Y. And my dad sometimes would find things that would say Gary, and he would grind off a bit of the G. And give me, so I know as a kid I had a little license plate with a ground down G to say Carrie. Aww. That's the closure you get when you give your kid a name like mine.
Dad loves you, but not enough to give you a normal name.
No, did I never tell you the story? My dad gave me my name on purpose. Did I never tell you my name
I don't
name
remember
story?
If you did. Tell me.
So my dad was like the 200th George in a row. He was George Whitfield Vanston. So was his dad. So was his dad before, blah, blah, blah. And my dad wanted to break the tradition. Like firstborn kid always got George. Mm-hmm. And my dad didn't like his name. Sorry for Georges out there. But my dad never liked his name his whole life. So I always said, if I have a son, I'm going to break the tradition. He won't be named George. But then he thought, if I'm breaking a tradition that's so many generations, I should, you know, not just break it and say I'm Bob or whatever. Again, sorry to Bob's out there. And so he lived in England for a bunch of years and heard Carrington as a last name. And so that would make a cool first name. So if I have a boy, I will break the tradition and I will give him Carrington. And then one day he had a boy and it was me and I am Carrington.
And then he had
that
a girl.
Is the story.
Then he had a girl and named her George.
Actually, he had a girl, then he had a girl, then he had me, then he had a girl. Mm.
Excellent.
We're all named Carrington, okay? We're all named Gary with a scratch.
This one's a little long, but I think it's good. We'll find out.
Let's find out together, shall we?
I started when he sent it in April, but that was a long time ago.
Because you haven't been driving.
Right. Yes, right.
We can use the same excuse, listeners.
Matt Guica? Hello, Matt.
Sure.
Sure. Hello, hi, Gru Eaters. Congratulations on nearing the end of your quest to play all the Infocom games. I just listened to your Beyond Zork episode. I'm a little behind. And oh, here, get that lot. And wanted to write in some answers you guys were wondering about relating to how Enchanter fits into the Zork universe and timeline. Oh, yes, that's why I liked this. First of all, yes, the Enchanter series is very much a part of the Zork universe. This wasn't merely retconned by Beyond Zork. The two were referencing each other as far back as Zork 3 as an Enchanter, but Sorcerer firmly established the two series as being in the same universe, having Zork-made coins, Gruus, an in-game encyclopedia containing a bunch of entries on things from the Zork games. I think Beyond Zork partly felt so jarring because, despite the name, it relates mostly to the Enchanter trilogy and had very little to do with the Zork trilogy. It was a fun theory that
good idea, Kay, but you're an idiot.
It was quaint.
It was, yes, adorable idea you have.
For Becky, you, little, that's a good idea.
Yeah, all right.
I feel like we're being patronized.
Yeah, I've gotten to the part of it. It was a fun theory that Enchanter might be a prequel to Zork, but no, it is set a couple of years later. You idiot, he implies. If you or listeners are interested, you can find the official and quite funny timeline of the Zork universe by doing an image search for Zork Grand Inquisitor timeline, though it contains a lot of spoilers. Maybe we'll do that after, if we ever play that game. So, is Beyond Zork a sequel to Spellbreaker? Well, actually, the two games take place at the same time. In the opening paragraph of Beyond Zork, all the wizards have been turned into newts and other amphibious creatures. Recall, this is happening at the opening scene of Spellbreaker. You guys said you felt it conflicted with or undid the ending of Spellbreaker, which may be true, but I actually love the concept of playing one game and achieving a certain goal, then playing another game as a different character who is racing against your former self to achieve a different goal. As for how it turned out, well, I 100% agree with your assessment of Beyond Zork. Having said that, in Beyond Zork, your goal is not exactly to undo the ending of Spellbreaker, but to preserve the remaining knowledge of magic so that future generations might rediscover it.
Okay, I get that. I get that. Like, I kind of didn't take it that way.
Yeah.
But I get it. Yeah, I get what he's saying.
Yeah, I get it. He thinks he's right, so that's cool.
I think he's right too, to be honest.
So thank you for that email, Matt. Yeah, I think that's probably good, don't you?
That's good.
I sent myself a couple of emails. Let's see what I had to say.
Listener K, right?
Listener
to say.
K said MIT source code, a link to Jason Scott's tweet saying the 1977 source code for Zork has been recovered from MIT tapes and released on GitHub. So this is the original, one of the most original early Zorks for mainframes. That's pretty cool.
One of the most original.
One of the most originalist. So I will put a link to that in the notes and see what else I had to say. I said a lot. Where'd the other one go?
Dear future me.
Dear future
me.
Exactly. Exactly what that was. This one's called Unwinnable State. Thank you for the clear subject line.
Florida?
Okay. let's see. Unwinnable State. Oh, it's a account on Twitter. Said, good day, Case Heavens and Carrington. Taking inspiration from Eaten by a Gru, I have embarked on a new project. It is called Unwinnable State. I am playing / reviewing the top 120, not 120, but top 100, parentheses, and 20, games in the Interactive Fiction database. I've started with Planetfall. Excellent. So if you need more people, you need to hear more people listening about... more people talking about the games that they've played, so you don't have to. It's a blog called Unwinnable State, and
you can read about people.
You can read, yes, and you can.
Nice.
It says it starts. It's spoiler free too, or it's at least it starts spoiler free, so you can. So that's awesome. I will put a link to
yes.
that.
Yes. Spoiler free is the way to be.
Well, yeah.
For you and
you
me.
You and me. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Free
yes,
to
indeed.
Be spoiler free.
Okay, there's other mail, but we're going to move on. And if we didn't read your letter, it's not because we don't love you. It's because your letter...
Yeah, we got a nice one from Turbin, I remember, but it was long and spoilery.
Because your letter was too long or too spoilery or just didn't bubble up.
We just don't like you.
We just don't like you.
You'll never know.
Yeah.
I don't think there is anybody in that category, but there could be, so watch your step.
Stationfall,
the sequel to Planetfall. Mm-hmm. You could tell because it's got fall in it.
Fall right in it. Yes, indeed.
It could have been called Station Spring. It's by Steve Mretzky, who wrote the first one.
Yes.
I like Steve Mretzky. So he's, just so I'm clear now, because now that we've done almost all these games, I should have it straight in my mind who is who. Mm-hmm. So this is the guy behind Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, yes. Well, with Douglas Adams, mm-hmm. and My Forever Voyaging, and Leather Goddess as Phobos, and some others, right? Oh, Stationfall. I think he did Stationfall.
This is Stationfall.
No, sorry. The other one. What's the other the space one? maybe he didn't.
What was the other one on the space station?
Because they're all starting to run together.
Oh, no, wait, absolutely. What was the space station one? No, Stationfall was... No, I don't know.
It came in a saucer. Starcross?
Starcross. Yes. So, yes.
I don't remember if he wrote Starcross.
As space station games
go... No, that was Liebling. Starcross was Liebling. Okay. So, anyway.
As space station games go, I think I prefer this one.
It is one of them.
It is one of them. It is, actually, yes. In the space station canon of Infocom, this is...
Yeah, it's lovely.
Lovely. Far be it for me to... Malign, the other space station game. Yes, so, but this game came, this game was released in June 1987, which being...
Okay, so this would be after Activision. We're in the second, Activision will now own Infocom in this period.
Right.
They're in that...
Activision is there, cracking the whip,
desperate.
Going like,
yeah.
hits,
30
come
games,
on.
We need a hit, we
stop
need
churning out this
month.
Art crap.
Right. You can see why they would look back at their catalog and mm-hmm. say, okay, what were our big hits?
Right.
Can we do another Hitchhiker as well? No, Douglas Adams probably doesn't want to, or it would take 19 years. Oh, Planetfall, that was a big hit. Everybody loves Floyd. Let's do one of those. So it makes sense.
Yeah, we've milked
Team Rescue wanted to do it.
Yeah, we've milked the Zork cow dry. We need some... Some other ideas that
the Zork cow is never dry.
Udders are chafing, and right. So, Planetfall came out in August '83. So, and then Activision and then Stationfall came out in June '87. So, 4 years later, which is kind of a long time in Infocom years.
It is, and I just looked it up, and yeah. So, Planetfall was Moretzky's first game, mm-hmm. and this is first Infocom game, and this is his last Infocom game.
Right.
So he bookended his Infocom career with these, with Planetfall and Stationfall.
Yes,
interesting.
Yeah, I believe he did later some graphical adventures later, but this absolutely was his last all text
cool.
game.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty, as bookends go, those are pretty.
Yep.
Pretty cool. Okay.
Although I gotta say, going into this, I'd never played this game either.
Yeah.
I had heard of it, but I think I would conflate Planetfall and Stationfall. Like, I wasn't really sure which was which, and it, the covers are sort of similar in them. And I think I had kind of heard maybe about Floyd. Like, I didn't really know about these games at all.
Right.
But I really, as little as I knew about Planetfall, I knew next to nothing about Stationfall. And now, having played it and then looked online to see what people say about it, it is a game that people mention, oh yeah, it also exists.
which I don't think is fair.
I don't think it's fair.
Okay, so
at all.
So I went in, I
wouldn't
want to say
surprisingly untalked about.
Yeah, I went in just, same as you. I knew stuff about Planetfall even before I played it the first time. I knew about Floyd.
Or back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. I knew what happened with Floyd. It had been kind of spoiled by the computer magazines and
yeah, I was very fortunate that it hadn't been spoiled. I went in totally fresh.
Yes, but I went in that fresh with Stationfall, and I was
me too.
Genuinely surprised by some stuff that happened there.
I was, from about the halfway point, began to be surprised, and then was continually surprised till the end. I was like, this is going in places I didn't think mm-hmm. it was going to go.
Indeed.
I did not anticipate. Which I liked it, but I went in completely fresh with this game.
Can I read the back of the box?
Yes, you can. Okay. I'm holding the box in my hands right now.
Oh, you lucky duck. Well, tell me about the front of the box, because I love it.
Front of the box reminds me a lot of the... Like, I really liked the artwork on the front of Planetfall with the space dude and the mop. And this clearly is art to say, hey, it's another one of those, because we got the space guy again.
Right.
But this time, instead of I think it was a mop. My vague memory is a mop from Planetfall. Yeah, but now he's holding a clipboard with papers and just papers everywhere, papers all over the place. So remember at the end of Planetfall, this won't be really spoilery, but the end of Planetfall, you do well and you get promoted. Yeah. So you go from being a mop pusher to being like a first class person. So instead you're now a paper pusher basically. So when you got promoted, it turns out it's not actually that great for
which
you.
Which drives
game.
Me crazy. He could have been, he's literally given the choice, I think, at the end of the game. I mean, it's implied.
Basically to own a planet.
He could have been the leader of a planet.
Yep.
But he
people
decided,
adored him. Everything. He decided he wanted to do this.
Right. He decides instead to stay with the Stellar Patrol and be a lieutenant first class. Woo! And do paper.
You know he must be talking about Glory Days stuff constantly. Everybody must hate this guy.
Shut up about
your planet, dude. So it says Station
you
Fall.
You could have been king of a planet. We don't care.
But here's the thing. So as we know, and again, not spoilery, but like, Planetfall has a robot in it named Floyd that is kind of famous. So ideally, if you haven't played Planetfall, that's all you know, that's all I knew, and that's all you should know going into that game. So in this game, it's a sequel to Stationfall. Now, you don't play Floyd. You play yourself or whatever in the game, and then Floyd is this NPC. The cover of this box says Stationfall. Floyd is back in the Bothoid sequel to Planetfall. Seriously implying that like the character you play is Floyd or whatever, but I guess it's just everybody knew who Floyd was and you're all excited about it. But no messing around, like you hold the box right on the front cover, Floyd is back, so it's not going to come as a surprise. And I guess they know, like, we're making a sequel, Activision wants a hit, everybody loves Floyd, right. We're making another game and it's not going to be like Floyd is in here, so we're giving you what you want. It's a game with Floyd.
Right.
Now you think you're getting what you want, but we'll see what you actually get.
We'll see.
But and it says by Steve Reske, author of Leather Goddesses of Phobos and The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So they're really pushing here. It's like it's what you liked. We're coming back. We are Activision. It's great. Remember the funny sex space games and the funny other space game. It's all of that. Please buy our game.
Please buy
it. There's also a sticker on mine that says get Planetfall for only $14.95. Offer enclosed expires 3/31/89. And it bothers me how Americans put their dates in that order. So I guess that's March 31st, 1989.
Sure. Or it's the third day of the 31st
month.
Yeah.
Or it's the 89th day of the 31st month of year three.
The back says, what a trotting crip. Since your incredible heroics on Planetfall, where you risked life and limb to save the planet Reseda, things have hardly changed at all. Sure, you were promoted to lieutenant first class, but this only meant that your dull life of clearing grotch click cages was replaced by an equally dull life of paperwork. Now you've got another assignment, tailor-made for a grotch brain. Pilot a space truck to a nearby station to pick up a load of trivial forms, trot and double trot. But all is not lost. By a happy twist of fate, your companion for the journey is your old pal Floyd. That's right. It's the same mischievous little robot, crayons and paddleball at the ready, who was your helpful buddy in Planetfall. Getting to the space station is easy, but once there, you find it strangely deserted. Even the seedy space village surrounding the station is missing its ragtag tenants. A spooky alien ship carrying only an empty pedestal rests in a docking bay. An ostrich and an Arcturian balloon creature are found, abandoned but in perfect health. The commander's log describes the mysterious breakdown of machinery demonstrated by a roving hull welder who seems bent on your destruction. And finally, even Floyd begins acting oddly. Steve Moretzky, whose interactive fiction successes include The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, trademark, and Leather Goddesses of Phobos, trademark, won a Best Computer Software Designer Award for Planetfall. Infocom fans constantly rating Planetfall among their favorite computer games have been begging for a sequel. Even if you've never played Planetfall, you will enjoy Stationfall. The puzzles will challenge your intellect, the humor will keep you laughing, and Floyd will win your heart.
Aww.
Aww. That description makes it sound like a bit of a giddy romp, which
there's some giddy romp stuff at the start.
This is a start, yeah.
It begins giddy and romping.
Gets a little.
In fact, you get literally romped on.
That's true. Yes, it gets a little dark.
It goes to kind of dark place.
Yeah.
So it's Bothoid, it's sequel, it's Floyd's back, he's going to win your heart, it's puzzles, it's mm-hmm. fun, it's Steve Reske, it's all humor.
Yep.
You will be fully unprepared for where this story goes. Wait till after the spoiler, friends, folks. We got things to tell you.
Mm-hmm. So you have the box. What's in it?
Okay, let's open up the box here. Inside, this is one of those games where they, like, it's, you know, it's a late Infocom game, so they are definitely using the feelies as copy protection. So there are, weirdly, I've got four of them, but you're only supposed to get three. There are these, in my case four, but three green pieces of paper that look like computer printouts. Remember the old computer print? Oh, I love tractor paper, where on the left and right side were all the holes and it was all perforated and it would go through your tractor feed printer. And so it looks like those, but it's just printed dots on the side. So alas, it's not holding actual tractor paper. But I got three forms. And it's an assignment completion form, a robot use authorization form, and a class 3 spacecraft activation form. And also, for some reason, I have a second robot use authorization form. So I am double feelied.
You're authorized to use two robots.
I am indeed. And one of the forms, it's like, you know, funny kind of form things, Infocom stuff, but one of them has this AstroGator's navigational data, this massive series of four columns of numbers. And that's what's used. Like, you've got at one point, look up in this column, you're given a code, and you have to look up a three-digit number, and that's your copy protection. So unless you get a photocopy of this page, of course, pretty easy to circumvent. I've got a patch. This is the feeling that's the best. There's like a sew-on patch like you get for if you were in like scouts or something, and you get a badge, and it's boldly going where aliens fear to tread, Lieutenant First Class. So I have this First Class, I don't think it's an iron. Yeah, like a sew-on patch. So I think that's pretty cool. And then there is Stellar Patrol of the Third Galactic Union official blueprints. So this is neatly done. So instead of a big fold-out map, like a lot of things come with, it, you know, cloth maps in the form of some RPGs, but a lot of Infocom games which come with a big fold-out paper map. This comes with a little booklet, it's kind of like an envelope, but open at the top, and you pull out all these cards in non-metric size. I'm going to guess that they're 4x6, so kind of like, or maybe even a bit bigger than like photographs. And there's a whole bunch of them, and one is a list of symbols so you can understand the maps, and the rest are all these maps of all the various levels of the space station. So it's really detailed and it's really cool. So you've got this whole collection of things. So as you're going through the space station, you could pull up the single page that is a map for the level that you're on. And I really like that. Like, they're neatly detailed, and just like with Planetfall, the world of this game is really engrossing. Like, I don't know what it is about, I guess it's the way he writes or something, but for both of these games, like, it's not a graphical game, but it's like reading a great novel where you're like just like in the setting. I completely felt in the setting, like gripped with terror at some points, or dread. But like, it just, I just, something about this, like these, both of these games are, to me, Infocom always wants to talk about how like the greatest graphic engine is your mind. In this case, I think it is. Like, I really, really get into the world of these games. Anyway, there's also a Get Help Fast page, send for official Infocom hint books and maps right now. So it's a thing I can mail off. Probably not good anymore. I got the Station Fall disc, in this case for the Apple II. I got the Apple II interactive reference card, and that's always the little card that is unique. So I've got the Apple II version. If you had an Amiga one, that would be changed. It's like how to run the game on your computer. There's a Boffoid savings on Planetfall card, so I can save up to $25 by getting Planetfall by sending in this coupon. And on the back, I'm supposed to tell it, to help us serve you better, please take a moment to answer the following questions. They want to know my age range, how many Infocom games I've purchased, how many of these purchases were made the last 12 months, and the name of the store. I really got to rat out everything. Name of the store or mail house where you bought Station Fall. And then finally, there's the Station Fall official technical manual, with that boldly going where aliens fear to tread some on the front. And this is basically what would be the browsy in a lot of games, where it's got the table of contents, and it's like, how do you play the game? What do you type in? And then it's got the sample interactive walkthrough. Because this is a box, well, it's a late box. It doesn't have that fold-out browsy that a lot of the games before this, even though it's a typical gray box with the stripes on it, mm-hmm. Most of the time you get that built-in little catalog thing, and it lacks that. Instead, it's just a manual that's inserted. I suspect that was cheaper to do. I bet you Activision said, look how much we could save if we did it this way. So it's still fine, but it's not as fun as like getting a fun magazine or something attached. So that's what I got.
Cool. I have three questions for you.
I got four answers.
Excellent. Did you mention the patch? Did you get a patch?
Yes, I mentioned the patch that it's not iron on and it's so on. I mentioned it in a funny way. You should have been paying attention. I was said great things
researching
about it.
the next brilliant thing I was going to say. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay.
Oh boy, you really set yourself out now. Look, what is this next brilliant thing?
Or was that it? Look,
when
I want to listen to this podcast and be entertained too, so I don't listen while you're talking.
Is that why you tune me out? The key to enjoying this podcast is to tune out me.
did you find, which we'll probably talk about this part later, but I had a very difficult time with this game because of the map. Because
yes,
the map was very large and kind of is almost entirely revealed to you at once, and it's a lot to explore, and honestly couldn't fit on a page, and is why I took so long to play this game. I started playing it, I was kind of into it, and I was, you know, mapping in my notebook as I always do, and then my map got so out of hand, I was just like, I'd run out of page and then I'd have to, you know, start on the next page. And then I just was confusing myself with my terrible map making skills that I set it aside and then completely lost momentum. And like 2 months went by. I'm just like, fine. And then I had to start the game over and start. And then my map got out of hand again, but I persisted. So my question for you, Carrington, is did having these little cute little card maps that came with the game, did that help you?
It helped me realize that the map was massive, and halfway through the game, it helped me realize I should go download the Lost Treasures of Infocom map and just get myself a map of the game.
I had to do that eventually, too. I really tried not to.
Say, I will admit to my first level of cheating in this. Yeah. I finally just said, I'm just going to download the stupid map.
Yeah.
So I downloaded the PDF from somewhere. There's like, because the Lost Treasures version of this comes with a completely mapped version of the game, which I normally don't like to do because a lot of times that's going to reveal spoilers and tell you where things are.
Yeah.
So I opened it up, zoomed it way out so it was kind of hard to read, and I just kind of put it in Photoshop and scribbled over all the text that was written outside of boxes because that's normally where they're going to write, like, this is where you can find this item, that's where you can find it. So I deleted all those as best I could. I missed a couple of them, but for the most part gave me a relatively-ish, kind of spoiler-free-ish map, but totally did reveal a whole bunch of stuff, and it just made the game easier.
Yeah. I used, I believe, the Inviziclues version of the map, which may be the same thing, but that's just the version that I came. And when I did, I discovered three rooms that I just hadn't noticed on my own. Because it's just so big.
Wasn't that hidden? Yeah. Just like
there's
that.
Some rooms that are just like literally exits in every direction, and I, you know, managed to not try some obscure direction and didn't find a room. And then there was some important stuff in one of the rooms, and that was just my own, you know, it wasn't really even a puzzle. It was just me being dumb, but, you know, like I said, I really did have some issues with mapping. My third thing regarding the feelies is I wanted to talk about really briefly a Twitter thread that I did in April during my first run through of this game on the robot use authorization form.
Yes.
I had some fun one day. There's some barcodes on it because it says instructions to issuee, and there's like, you know, a bunch of boilerplate form text. And then at the bottom it says instructions to the robot.
And then which is just a barcode.
It's barcodes, right? So, like, what happens if you scan these barcodes? So I got a decent barcode scanning app on my phone, and I started scanning the barcodes. And two of the lines didn't do anything, but one of them resolved to a number. And I Googled that number, and that number gave me one hit to a 2009 blog post about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for Infocom. And so now my mind is like what's going on here? So it turns out that it used the same barcode. You know, the art guys probably just, you know, literally copied and pasted with X-Acto knives, you know, from another product or something.
Right,
they need barcodes. Here's a barcode, right? So, and then that barcode would be a UPC number for an Infocom product, but the Infocom product doesn't exist.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Anyway, I did a whole little thread about it. It's semi-interesting and leads nowhere. But yeah, I was having playing the meta game of playing with the barcodes. So, okay. Great. So we've talked about the box.
Yep, and it's a very big map.
Yeah, you know, it is a big map.
There's like eight. It's like it's a space station where it kind of bulges in the middle. So there's eight levels, but it's like level five is the really big one.
Yeah.
And then the levels, they kind of get smaller as you go out towards the fore and the aft of it, or the top and the bottom, or however you want to think of it.
Right.
So like the middle level, like level five, is a really big level on its own. But it's just because you start on the SS Duffy, which was your little. Like the place where you start the other game as well, and you take the little space truck, because you just add space in front of anything, it becomes cool. Take a space truck over, but then when you land on this space station, you're kind of just like there, and it for some reason, like, I don't, we'll look at the stats later. I'm really interested to see like kind of how many rooms are and how many ways to die and whatever, but I think it felt bigger than it even is. So I'll be interested to see what the number works out to be, but I suspect I will be surprised at how low it is. But I just kept having this feeling like the game feels like it's 300 locations, mm-hmm. but it can't be as big as it is. But it just felt massive for some reason. Yeah. I think maybe because we've played a bunch of games where it'll be a 300 location map, but you're, at any given time you're in a section that only has five locations, and you're like leaping around or teleporting around to these little tiny mini maps.
Right.
And here you're just like, welcome to the world. It's giant. It's all trying to kill you. Have fun.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have played games where that are very big, but they're in sections, so you can. It's like bite-sized pieces that maybe reveal themselves a bit at a time. So it's like, oh, we're going to explore the castle area. Now we're going to explore the waterfall area or whatever it is. And this one, it's like, here's the world. And
yep.
And
I couldn't keep it in my head. Mm-hmm. We've played games with relatively large maps as far back as like playing Ballyhoo, where I was like, I get a feel for it. I know if I want to go from this place over to that part of the tent, I go up a couple, go right a couple, go up one more, and I'm going to be at the, like, and so I could get a sense of the world.
Right.
Here I would have a rough sense. Okay, if I'm in this part where the station control is, I know that if I got to go over to the Broadway section, I think, and like somewhere south of that will be the trading post. I think, like, I have like vague ideas, but I'd always have to pull up the map and go, okay, how do I get from, if I'm in the Main Street area down there, how do I get up to where the grocery store, the opium den or whatever?
Right.
I don't even get there. I know it would exist, but I would have no idea where it is in space.
And there,
I just couldn't keep it in my head.
Mm-hmm. And yes, absolutely. I mean, in any other game, after a while, I'm just like, okay, I need to get, you know, from the castle to the waterfall. It's, you know, north, northeast, northeast. I'm there, right? And this one, every time I needed to make a move, I'm consulting the map. And sometimes time is really of the essence in this game.
Oh, even and more so. Because, boy, the ticking clocks came back with the whole food.
Yeah, there are ticking clocks, and it's just like you need to optimize every move, and sometimes you don't want to go north and then east when it's a possibility to go northeast, because every move sometimes counts.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Funny with My Fair of a Voyaging is another one that felt like a massive map, because you're like just in this city. It really felt like just an open world game.
Yeah.
But even in that, I wouldn't have an idea. Like, I can think of it now. Like, I'm in the city. If I'm going to be at the place where I lived, I know north and slightly west of me is where that arena is. And like, I had a sense of where everything was. I never got that sense in this map for some reason.
We both had that problem. That's weird. Maybe something about being in space, the anti-gravity.
It could be space. In space, nobody can hear you say, where the heck am I?
Yeah. How did you play this game? Did you do it on your Apple emulator like normal?
I did indeed. Yeah, I played it using Pitch Dark.
Yeah, I did too. Nice. Which I love Pitch Dark, but I really do. I have no complaints about it, but I feel constrained, and I'm sure I've said this before, compare on Zoom, when I played on Zoom, I could have 100 save files for a game.
Yeah.
And being constrained to the 7 or 8 that Pitch Dark does, it's like, do I want to save here? Am I willing to throw away one of these other things? And I had to restart this game several times or go significantly back. And I'm just like, oh, do I really want to save? You know, yeah, it was every save.
And well, that limitation is kind of like a period accurate limitation, but you get spoiled when you play on things like Zoom to say, I can have 100 saves.
Right.
001 just begun, baby. Yeah. And I can just like go and go and go. So it is a limitation. I'm okay with it now. Like, I just kind of cycle through them, and then eventually if I've got so many, I'm back to my first save slot, then that's fine, because I'm never going to remember where everything is and or which each save is. But it does feel a little limiting to not be able to just have a bunch of saves and call them anything I want as hints to where I was in the game.
Right. Yeah.
But I still love it. I just enjoy the experience of playing the games in pitch dark so much that I'm not willing to go and trade just to get more save slots.
Okay, I agree with you. Pitch dark is great. Yeah, they'd have to just write down where what you saved and what the context was and that sort of thing, and it's fine. Speaking of saving and restoring, in the original Planetfall game, when you type save, Floyd would say, "Oh boy, are we going to do something dangerous now?"
Yep.
Which continued in this game. But I noticed one time when I did a restore in this game, Floyd looks disappointed but understanding. That part of the story was more fun, he sighs.
I liked it when, did you check the version of the game?
No.
If you check version, Floyd looks out at you right through your computer screen. See that copyright notice? He asks in a defiant tone, if anyone tries pirating this disc, they'll have Floyd to answer to.
Nice.
Floyd just loves to break the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm. He does.
Oh, Floyd.
Floyd. Okay, so I asked you, we were talking about the world, the map feeling big. Do you want to talk about how big the map was?
Yes, I do. Okay. Tell me.
All right.
Yeah, stats? You got stats.
I got stats.
Oh, we get stats.
I do.
Stats, stacks and stacks and stats.
Mm-hmm. It is, in room-wise, it's exactly the size of Planetfall. 105 rooms.
Coincidence?
No, no, no. I don't know. Hard to say. I mean, the average Infocom game has 81 rooms, so it's bigger than average, but not bigger than the last Infocom game we played. So.
But it's so much later. They were making, like, this game... It's got so much description. I assume this game was butting up against its 128K limit. Like, it felt like a game where there's a ton of text and it's filling it out. So I'm surprised that it's the exact same size as... Boy, it felt bigger than Planetfall.
It did.
That's funny.
Yeah. The vocabulary was 789 words, which the average Infocom game's 976, but Planetfall was 699. So, you know... I don't know.
I felt it totally adequate. I did.
I did
don't
too.
Remember butting up against the whole guess the verb thing,
no,
or whatever.
Not
like
even
it felt
once.
Like it was doing its Infocom thing where I'm going to type in stuff. It's going to understand what I want. And it's going to act. It doesn't mean it's always going to work, but it's going to not trip me up. The parser just worked in this one,
yes.
Like really well.
Strong agree. Yeah. Objects, 53 objects, which is a lot compared to the average Infocom game of 39, and a little bit more than Planetfall, which had 45.
But, you know, these games do love their red herrings.
They
so.
Do, yes. Moretzky loves a red herring. And there was stuff in
Boy,
here.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time going just like, is this going to be a thing? Or is it trying to
or
waste
is it
my
just
time?
Here?
And having having just played Planetfall, which had red herrings galore, I felt like super suspicious of everything.
Me too. You get like 100%. It's like, okay, I've got this spray can or whatever.
Yeah.
Do I have it because I need it? It looks like a thing I could be used. That sounds like a usable thing. Or is it just here? Am I going to carry this around for the rest of the game? And just like every, I would, or just, I'd read a description. Am I going to need to know that? Do I need to know where that is? Or what that, do I need to take this instruction sheet with me and carry it always? Or
right.
just,
or just know, it or know what's on it.
Just right. know the contents. Yeah.
And you yeah. can't carry everything around because like Planetfall, you can't carry everything around.
Nope.
There's not even a bag.
Moretzky also loves to limit your inventory.
Yeah, well, yep, he does. You can only carry a certain number of things around. There's not even a bag or anything. And then that stupid thing where if you have too many things, you start dropping them. And
that I don't like. Yeah. In the words of our listeners, we hate Moretzky. Actually, I don't really like it. Do not at all. But still, I don't like to drop anything. You pick up another thing. Oh, and then you fumble with this and you drop that other thing. I'm like... Don't waste my turns, man.
Right.
Like, you know I'm going to starve to death three moves from now.
Deadline,
I don't have time to pick that up again. Now, if I drop a thing, I now have to restore my game because I'm so time limited.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff's a little annoying. And also the whole, the magnetic cards to open doors are back again, like from mm-hmm. Planetfall. But it's like, and you corrupted it. Ha, too bad for you. Guess you can't win now.
Yeah, you can corrupt the card. And the way I decided that, oh, I know why the card's getting corrupted, apparently that's not the way, or at least not the way that maybe there's more than one way, or I was completely wrong about what the way was to corrupt the cards. But yeah, you can corrupt your magnetic cards and then you're just screwed.
Yep.
You just gotta start over. Or
yep.
go back to pre-corruption.
This game is not trying to take it easy on you.
No. There's 34 ways to die. 34 ways to die. Planetfall has 42, and the average Infocom game has 30. So yeah.
Did you find them all?
feel like it. Yeah. But mostly it was starving to death.
How quickly did you die? What was your first death? I died super early. I died on the Duffy.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I was wondering about that. But this, so at the beginning of the game, this is not a spoiler. At the very beginning of the game, you have a choice of three robots, right?
I died before that.
Oh, really? Well, okay. This is the earliest way I died. There's three robots to choose, and it's obvious that you're supposed to pick Floyd. I mean, it's just completely, of course you are.
Right.
But if you pick one of the other two robots, you die in different funny ways very quickly. So that was the earliest death that I could find by intentionally picking the wrong robot. What about you?
You can fall asleep on the job, and then you get demoted, and you get locked in the brig, and then they execute you.
Really?
Yes.
Do you like type sleep, or how do you
it's just like, yep. So it's awesome. I was like, you know, you try stuff and you're like, oh, okay, harsh game, man. But I also, yeah, if you pick the big tank thing, it basically just crushes you. It's like, and then there, you can't do the, I mean, it's not really spoiler because it's so early, but you, yeah, the secretary bot or whatever, your third choice, can't fly the ship. So I'm like, you really only have, you're giving me three choices, but one kills me, one can't fly me to where I want to go, and then there's Floyd. So I guess we're playing with Floyd.
Yeah.
But it would have been interesting if you could just take a different, and say like, play the game with a different robot. Like how fun would that be?
Oh,
like
yeah.
A totally different game. Forget Floyd, I'm bringing Hulk, or I'm bringing the secretary bot or whatever, and just let you get, even if it's just let you get like almost to the end game. That seems like a risky thing. Oh, just can't do the end game.
Right.
At the Hulk one, you probably couldn't win the game actually. So good luck solving it the way you solve it in this game. So. There's more robots than those. We could talk about other robots.
Let's talk.
Trying to think, like, what can we talk about that's not spoiler?
Yeah, let's talk about
other robots. There's basically C-3PO in this. So there's a robot called Plato, and there's Oliver. I want to talk about Oliver too, but there's Plato in my notes. I'm like, Plato, another robot. Will it be like Floyd? It's not really like Floyd. Floyd really likes it, but it's like Plato says, "I am quite surprised to discover you here," says the robot. "I have not seen a soul for a day now, perhaps more. But look, here I am forgetting my manners again. I am known as Plato to the humans on this station. I am most gratified to make your acquaintance." Total C-3PO.
Yeah, I just thought he was like a nerd, but you read it like that, and yeah, that sounds like C-3PO.
Oh, I completed my mind. I was like, I think they were... Because the weird thing is, I'm not 100% sure... I don't know that I can describe what Floyd looks like. Except, like, you keep hearing details. Like, he's got all these hatches that open, and at one point in this, he's wearing an eye patch. So I'm talking about, like, Floyd's got an eye patch. It's all very weird.
And he cries tears. And,
he cries tears of, like, oily tears. Yeah. And so I think of Floyd as, like, a little round-ish, so like an R2-D2 kind of thing, except R2-D2 is a real smartass. But Floyd's like, so it's kind of like a childish R2-D2. So you can see how, like, you'd have a C-3PO, like, how do you avoid that, or maybe it's just I'm bringing it. I bring Star Wars to everything. But in my mind, Plato was totally a C-3PO, but then goes to a different C-3PO place than C-3PO does. And then there's also Oliver, who's like a baby robot that's not really conscious yet, which is totally a Cousin Oliver thing. Got to be on purpose.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
Robbie Wrist is in this game. It's Cousin Oliver all the way.
Yes.
There's welder robots who want to kill you.
There's welder robots that want to kill you wandering around. Yeah. And they're easy to avoid, but luckily it's So you're on this space station and things are going wrong and it's your job to
because the world it's like the first game. I really like the world of the first game because you're kind of on this planet and everyone's gone. And we talked about it when we did Planetfall. Like, I love that kind of setting. I love a setting where it's like, you're here, everyone's gone. What happened? Find the mystery. Mm-hmm. I love a post-apocalyptic setting. I love a setting where everyone's just vanished. I really dig that in books and movies and games and all of it. So it's like, it's right up my alley. And we return to that idea again. So here, instead of being on a planet like that, you're on a space station and everybody's gone. Where did they go? It's completely empty. It's you, your robot, your extra robots, some welding things. It's dark. And it's like this, like the first game, there's a mystery. There's a virus again. Like, it's really, let's repeat the kind of story of the first game. It's like another take on the first game where everybody's vanished. There's a ticking clock. There's a virus. You got to sleep. You got to eat. But it goes to a weirder, darker sort of place. But the initial setting is the same thing. But instead of being on a weird alien planet, you're on a weird abandoned space station, which is like an extra creepy kind of setting, but the same sort of idea, where it's just you in a place where there should be other people, and there's like notes from people in history, like hints of where everyone's gone, mm-hmm. but you're just left alone.
It's a lot.
So I love that kind of setting.
Yes, and it's similar to Planetfall in which there is a story here that you will uncover slowly as you explore.
Yes.
The
good set. Point. Exactly. That you get, you're going to determine that backstory by finding all these pieces, and you kind of puzzle right. it together. Although at one point, Plato also just wants to say, "And let me tell you what's going on." So right. there's also that.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was kind of like a movie trope thing, where I'm going to tell you a lot of totally. Stuff, and yeah.
But I like that. I like it's a setting, and the things in the setting are going to tell you the story. So yes. you're going to find this letter here. You're going to find this thing here. You find all right. these pieces, and slowly in your mind comes together what happened before this game started, and you get the backstory through the things you find, and that's great.
Yes.
I really like how Moretzky does that.
Yes. So this is not your typical treasure hunt game, being like Zork or Ballyhoo or anything. This is a reveal the story and figure out the puzzles game, certainly. And there's stuff you've got to, you know, objects you need to find in order to do that. But yeah, not a treasure hunt, more of a story game. Which
yes.
I really
and not that
like.
There's no puzzles, but the puzzles are also kind of like of the world. It's like when you get a Zork game, it's normally you've gone in this room, here's something that's like its own thing. This is going to be a waterfall with three gongs and a bird or whatever, right. and you solve that puzzle and then you've got your treasure. This is more like this world will have stuff to uncover, and the puzzle, it all seems very organic. I really dig it. I think Moretzky is a really good world builder. Mm-hmm. I dig it a lot.
Yeah. Me too. And he's funny.
Yep.
Funny. Let's see, what did I put down? I wrote down two things to mention specifically. I'm trying a new way to link to things. Is this working? It's not working. I see what I did. There's a box of, you find a room filled with boxes of forms.
Oh, forms. Forms. Oh my gosh.
And, you know, open box. It says forms and 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 forms. Horrified, you reseal the box.
It's like it's got this whole like at the beginning, like the whole point, the whole you're going to this starts because you're going to take your space truck. I just love that it's space truck. Take your space truck to a space station because you're supposed to pick up a what's it called?
Space forms.
Request for Stellar Patrol Issue Regulation Black Form Binders Request Form Forms. like that's which reminded me when I previously reading about Infocom and Moretzky. I guess he was one of the guys really into memo hacking. I think they called it. I don't know if we've talked about that.
No,
before.
We haven't. Yes, that's what they call it. But
where they would do this thing where they would like kind of make fun of bureaucracy and change. I guess the story that stands out for me is that at one point there was this a person in Infocom that they started calling memos because she would put out all these memos. And at one point put out a memo saying they wanted to do something or ask him a question. And then I think it was Moretzky who changed the memo and put out a version that said that Infocom now wants to take care of all your home's house plants and fill out this thing, and then HR had to like put a cover sheet on it all, go around and say no, don't take that memo seriously. So Moretzky printed a new cover sheet to go over that. So no, don't take that cover sheet seriously. And like would do that kind of thing, and I think that's just speaks of the kind of the atmosphere of Infocom at its prime, and I just love it. And so you can see how somebody with that mentality makes this game, and just like you can see where they came up with the idea for bureaucracy and like all these things, mm-hmm. But this whole idea of forms and forms and forms and just like all these crazily named forms that are our form and just I dig it a lot.
Sounds exhausting to work with, frankly.
Almost certainly.
There's a crystal ball. Look into ball. As you gaze into the ball, a vision takes shape. Tiny letters deep within the crystal. Tips. Be general with your predictions. Always promise romantic encounters and wave your hands around the crystal ball. The marks just love that touch. he makes me laugh. It's funny.
Me too. There's footnotes in this.
Yes.
We haven't talked about that yet. Mm-hmm. And which is like they were in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, also did the footnotes thing.
Yes.
And if there's a footnote about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this, I wrote it down somewhere in my notes. Here it is. The author wishes to refute any claims that the use of footnotes is a ripoff from the interactive fiction version of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. This is not true. Well, maybe it's a little bit true, in which case the author wishes to point out his right to rip off his own ideas. So there.
Nice.
He's just funny. Like, it just, like, just lots of little things that just, like, in the way they're written or, like, the kind of fundamental idea or just tickles me. Like, lots of little things tickle me.
Okay, so we've established we like the world building. We've just established that Moretzky continues to be funny. Let's talk about Moretzky's fairness. Are the puzzles fair in your opinion?
I say yes, and I think you're about to say no.
I'm going to say mostly. There was one, you know, I did my wrote my list of cheats and things, but there was one I was just like instantly incredibly glad that I cheated because I never would have figured it out. But mostly, yeah, stuff that made sense, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I don't like stuff like, you know, you corrupted the card and so there you can't, like, there's things, and I don't like timer things. I don't like having to eat, like, all the stuff that bothered me in Planetfall, which I really liked the game. It bothers me here. Like, so I, but it, not everything's about me. It's a thing I've had to learn. So
it's the worst, isn't it?
It's the worst to learn that. Like, my 2-year-old self is like, no, I'm the center of my universe. But not every element of a game has to be about me. But I think overall it is fair. It's just hard. So just because I have to go and look up an answer or cheat, I don't think that's necessarily the game's fault. It's my fault for not being a good enough gamer. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the impression I'm left with it. Sometimes I do look up stuff and there's some Infocom games where I'm like, come on, that's just silly. That was just there to sell hints. But I don't know that anything in this game left me with that impression. So I'm going
to
say fair.
Talk to you about that after the spoiler fest, because there's one that I'm just like, thought was ridiculous. Like I said, it was the one that I was instantly glad that I looked up.
Right.
Yeah.
I dig it. I think it's funny. I think it's interesting. I think it goes to a weird place that I didn't anticipate. I'm really anxious to talk about the difference between the ending of this game and the ending of Planetfall.
Yes.
And their similarities and their differences, which I think is a meaty discussion, but totally past spoiler fence.
Yes, indeed.
Let me see if I don't know what else. It's so plot oriented. I don't know how to talk about most of this without being spoilery.
Right. Yeah, we shouldn't. You know, people should. I think this is a game that I would absolutely recommend.
Strongly recommend.
After playing Planetfall,
you should complete Planetfall. I think even though the back of the box says you don't need to have played Planetfall, you'll enjoy this much better if you play Planetfall. And the stuff that's effective, especially at the end, will be much more effective if you've played Planetfall.
Indeed.
So I really think you should play. Even though, I mean, it is a standalone game, I think you will get a lot more out of it if you played Planetfall. This is what I think.
Let's see. I did not learn any words from Moretzky this time. Yeah, it's okay. I'm smart enough.
Am I to know better.
So did you finish? Did you win?
I did. I got my 80 points. Mm-hmm. I think it was 80 points. Yep. I finished with my 80 points. What about you? Did you win?
Yes, I did.
I mean, I cheated, so.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, I finished. I won.
Did you cheat?
Did I? Oh, yeah, I cheated.
You got the map. But
I got the map.
Oh, yeah.
No,
you
I cheated.
Said, right.
Yeah, I cheated. We'll talk about specifics later, but. Yeah, I did as, you know, went as far as I could without cheating, and then I broke the seal and started cheating like crazy.
That's how these games go.
Yeah. So I feel like this game held up. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was an excellent sequel, even though it could have been.
It is a good sequel,
though,
right?
It could have been a crappy money grab, you know, by Activision, and it wasn't.
Right. Yeah. And especially given its timing and stuff, I think this easily could have been a very bad game. And for how little people talk about it online,
yes,
I find that weird. It's like this, I don't know if it wasn't popular or what, or just nobody plays it. It's weird that nobody talks about this game online because it is a very worthy sequel. I think it stands up. It's better than a lot of other Infocom games, so I don't understand why this doesn't get discussed more. It has a really interesting plot that, like, and, like a full real plot. Mm-hmm. Like, there's things to talk about here. It's funny that it's so little discussed, and I think it stands as a really good example of a sequel where it brings back the characters before, but does different things with them that still seem kind of in keeping with character. Like, I enjoyed that it's a world, in a sense, very similar to the first world, but it is a new take on it. Like, and so yes, it's everyone's gone, and yes, there's a virus, but we go to a different place. I thought it was great. Like, I was surprised at how good of a sequel I think this is. Because a lot of sequels are either like terrible or just rehashes or, like you said, like just a cash grab or whatever. And this is an example of a really well done sequel. Like, I think this is what you'd want from a sequel. So I dug it. I dug it tons. I absolutely think people should play it.
Me too.
Yeah.
All right. We need to pick our next game before we hop the spoiler fence.
Oh, but we also have to say, should people play this as a first game?
Oh, no. They should play this as a second game. After Planetfall.
Oh, really? Second? You think Planetfall should be somebody's first game, and then this is the second game they ever played?
Okay. This should, I was like, heck no. This should not be a first game.
This should be an 11th
but
game.
But if Planetfall was your first game, this should be your second game.
Especially if you won Planetfall without cheating, then, you know.
Right, sure.
Infocom's only got so much to offer you now.
This shouldn't be a first game, but it's...
No, this is a hard game. Yeah. I don't know if this was still... They were doing that whole expert or medium level or whatever.
No, this was just sci-fi.
Because I think... if they were, what do you think it would have been rated?
Expert.
I think Expert too. Yeah. I think it's a tough game.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just because I
had to cheat. There's harder games that were... I mean, there's easier games that were labeled Expert, I think, in the series. Right. This is way better than the other Space Station game, which I can't remember the name of.
Station... No. Boy, it really is... That's the second time. Like, we only just...
I know, we just...
Thought of it. Wow.
Yeah, okay. I know. It's that forgettable.
No, but see, the thing is, Starcross.
Starcross, yes.
I remember liking Starcross. I wonder if I'm wrong about that, but I remember the time actually quite liking Starcross. I still remember parts of Starcross. I remember the puzzle with all the dots. I don't want to say what it is. And I remember the bridge sort of thing. Like, I remember the setting of Starcross. Mm-hmm. So,
it was the space station.
I remember making a joke about Starcross lovers.
Sure.
In our show.
It was hilarious. So, like, oh, yes.
So something stand out for me.
The good old days.
Fifteen years ago, we started this.
2017, July 2017, almost exactly 3 years ago. Actually,
we had no idea what the world held in store.
Oh my God,
the LCA, remember 2017? Glory days, baby. Speaking of there being nobody left on a planet for being killed by, why do we keep playing all these games where everyone's dead from a disease?
Yeah,
boy, we saved these suckers for 2020, huh?
Remember, I started this project because I was feeling stressed. I don't want to be less stressed. Not working, Carrington. Jeez.
We hate Smoretsky.
Smoretsky hates us.
Smoretsky hates us. Okay, so we should pick the next game. I think we were down to
two left.
So really, we're going to pick the next two games then.
Really? Yes, yes.
Your turn to pick, I think.
There's two. Is it? I thought it was your turn. Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, because I don't know. It was 15 years ago when we last recorded. But
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have taken so long.
No, that wasn't a dig. But I was like, who remembers, right? So
We will choose together, Carrington.
Oh, that's love, baby.
Of the two text adventures that are left, there are these.
I'm gonna say, what are they?
The Lurking Horror,
right?
And Wishbringer.
Now, we had somebody write in to say that we should keep Wishbringer for the last one.
Really?
I don't remember what the thinking was.
But you had wanted to save the Lurking Horror to last.
Well, not necessarily want to save. I mean, for me, like, we have basically saved it. From the very beginning, the Lurking Horror is the game I have most looked forward to. Everybody else is like so excited about My Favorite Voyaging or the Zork games or whatever. Everyone has their own favorites of things. Yeah. Turns out I really love the Spell ones, which I never knew, like the Wishbringer type series. Like, who knew how good those would be? Like, my gosh.
Oh, the Enchanter series, yeah.
The Enchanter series. And, you know, and Sea Stalker was totally your favorite. So everybody has their own.
Was it though?
Yes. Okay. but from the beginning, yeah, the one I have, for some reason, the one that always, maybe it's because I love horror stuff or maybe because it's the MIT-ish sort of setting. But in my mind, I've built it up huge. Like, I think that is going to be it's almost certainly going to disappoint me. I don't see how it cannot disappoint me. But I don't think it really matters what order we play things in. So what do you feel like playing next? Because they're not related to each other, so we're going to get to them both.
Right. I feel like playing Wishbringer.
Wishbringer it is, baby.
Cool.
So Wishbringer is not part of the
Enchanter series. It is not. It has something to do with magic somehow, but it's not part of the other series.
Okay, because I've always conflated them.
Absolutely.
In a series, right? Okay. Yeah. But I don't think I know anything about it. Like, I don't know. Do you know who wrote that one?
Nope.
Okay. Do we hate Sim?
We may.
I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
It's Brian Moriarty. Okay.
Oh, we hate him.
No, do we? No, he did Beyond Zork, but he did Trinity, which is, oh my gosh, so good. So, you know, maybe this is the other one that's amazing.
Oh, okay. Didn't he do... okay, no. Oh, we don't hate him. Okay. I thought he did Sherlock, no. In which case I hate him.
I like Sherlock. Man. You're wrong about Sherlock. We're going to do a summary episode eventually of all the ones we love best.
Yes, yes, we are.
Sea Stalker and Sherlock all the way down from me, baby. Just checking all the boxes. But Trinity, still remember how much I like Trinity. Oh my gosh, that was such a game, right? So somebody can make Trinity has got to be able to make something good.
That's true.
When it comes to wishing stones or whatever this is about.
Right, magical love. Yeah.
I think
glowing.
It comes with a stone. Is it supposed to come with like a glowing rock or something?
Yes.
I have a vague memory that Whispering Grass. Get out of yourself.
We'll talk about it next time. Yeah, that comes with
Vague memory. It's a prediction. I predict glowing stones.
I see. Excellent.
It's a game with some stones, man.
Okay, so Wishbringer, despite the fact that someone said we should do otherwise.
Yeah, what do our listeners know?
Yeah, I don't know. They know.
I think we should play Wishbringer next, despite our listeners.
Mm, okay.
That'll show you.
We probably also didn't read their letter, and then they're probably doubly mad at us.
But they're not mad yet, because everyone's so far behind it. But, you know, a year from now, when people finally get to the next episode
right.
of the podcast.
They're going to be driving to work.
They talked
August
about me 2021, back in
2020. Going, damn it, Kay and Darrington. Yeah. It'd be retroactive.
Cool. Okay, we got it. Wishbringer will be next.
Wishbringer will be next. Great.
Excellent. Okay, good choice.
Cool. Do the spoiler fence spiel, will you?
There's a spoiler fence, and the spiel is if you pass it, we have no sympathy for you, because on the other side of the spoiler fence now, we are going to talk about Stationfall in detail. We're going to spoil the ending. We're going to spoil the plot. We're going to spoil the puzzles. We're going to tell you everything and ruin the experience of the game, for instance. So if you have played the game, then absolutely join us on the other side where we start talking about in detail and talking about spoilery things. If you are sure you are never going to play the game because it doesn't interest you, or you simply, you know you, and you're never going to have time, then fine. Come with us and we'll tell you the plot and you can kind of vicariously enjoy the game. But if you think you might want to play the game, we urge you to not listen anymore, because the podcast will always be here. You can always come back and listen to the other half and give yourself an opportunity to play Stationfall, not being spoiled. And I got to say, for both Planetfall and Stationfall, I'm very happy I went in not knowing stuff. These games in particular are better if you go in blind. So if you haven't played it and you think you might want to play it, I urge you to not listen to our podcast. Like, unsubscribe, in fact. Just go away.
Wow.
I never want to talk to you again. Hardcore. Just because I think the games are better if you go in blind for this one in particular.
Yes.
But if you, given that caveat, if you want to join us, then leap over the spoiler balustrade with us. And now let's talk in more detail, in spoilery glory, about Stationfall.
Are they gone?
They're gone. Okay. Everybody unsubscribed.
Good.
Our listener count is now zero. Whoops. Or one. There's only you listening to the parts because you tuned me out.
Right.
You have to subscribe. We now have the one listener.
Sorry, what would you say?
Listener K.
Sorry, what? I liked this story. I felt I kind of knew what was going to happen just based on the back of the box. I mean, it's like things start going wrong, and
I didn't think it was going to go as dark as it did. I didn't think it was going to be like hardcore creepy dark.
No, it gets hardcore.
Like much more so. I mean, weirdly to say, because Planetfall. Oh, okay. I don't want to spoil that Planetfall. Okay, so. People might not listen to Planetfall, but Planetfall goes to a kind of darkish place at the end. But then it's like Disney. Oh, no, it's all fine. Everything's good. Blah, blah.
Yeah.
This is like, we're going dark and we're going to commit.
Yeah.
And I like it better. I think it's a better game for it. I think that I didn't like the... Oh, sorry. Banging my mic. I didn't like the fact that Planetfall didn't really commit to it. In fact, I argued that maybe it's all in the person's head. Like, I have this whole theory of the end of Planetfall, which is almost certainly wrong, but I like my theories. Whereas this game commits to the darkness and just starts to get that creepiness to it, where you're going through the doors, because the whole station's kind of turning against you, and the doors, instead of opening all the way, they open kind of like just enough for you to squeeze through and then want to slam shut on you. And it's just like, as you're moving around, you think like the food dispensers start to want to poison you, and the welders are trying to weld you.
Everything's trying to kill you.
everything's trying to kill you, but you've got your happy little robots, and you've got your C-3PO in Plato, and you've got your lovely friend Floyd, who also both start to turn. Mm-hmm. And that is just weird and creepy and delightful, right? Yeah. Oh, goodness. Because you love little Floyd, our little friend Floyd. And Floyd's like stepping on your foot and not apologizing, going a little dark. Like, oh,
making rude little jokes. And it's like, I could get it. I got it when Oliver started to be pissy and rude.
Right.
But then it's like when Floyd's doing it, you're just like, oh, what's happening now? You know, happy little
Floyd. It's more
Floyd.
Effective. And it's effective because we went through that whole first game with Floyd.
Yeah.
So when Floyd's, because Floyd is like a little kid. He wants to play hider and seeker. And he's, oh, hider and seeker at the very end. I'm like, just wants to play all these little games and it's fun. But then when Floyd, you get Floyd's dark side, right? And be struggling with it, but still, it's effective. So the whole place turning on you, but Floyd isn't that little light of goodness. Instead, he's turning. It's good. I like that. Yeah. I liked it a lot.
And there's another thing I liked, and it was like a scary horror movie kind of way. You're like in the library or something, watching film strips or whatever to learn about how things work on the space station.
Another holdback from Planetfall. The same thing. The film strips.
Yeah, except you can't really watch them because all of a sudden they're static and it says die human.
Right, exactly. It's just like, what? I mean, it's so creepy,
it
right?
Is creepy.
It's like,
I
oh
felt
my goodness,
genuinely like creeped out by it, like in a way that I was surprised at.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, yeah, and sometimes, I mean, a lot of these games, you get those little film strip, whatever they're called, and you learn about how things work in the station. And this, you don't really, because they're so infected with static and a voice trying to tell you to go die.
Yep. And the funny thing is, I didn't predict the ending correctly. In my notes, I absolutely predicted that the end of this game, Floyd's going to kill me. I really thought we're going dark and this game is going to end with a dark thing and I will be dead because Floyd kills me. Mm-hmm. So I got it backwards, opposite. But that's where I thought we were going for some reason. I thought Floyd's going to full on turn and Floyd will be the end of me instead of the actual ending, which is basically the same thing reversed. But the robot's turning on me and just... Oh, I mean, I wasn't surprised when Plato tried to kill me, because C-3PO has always had a creepiness to him anyway.
Sure.
So, but I like the idea that like you see Moreski thinking about it, like the first time everyone's gone because of a virus. What's another sort of virus? Well, what about a computer virus? What if everybody's gone because of a computer virus? How would that work? And so it's like the station's been infected, and it's like, you know, you can see how like Alien is before this, and so you got creepy space station and everything in it trying to kill you because of the pyramid computer thing, and just really effective. I really liked that. And I really liked finding all these things, the bloody notes, all this stuff to kind of let you piece together the fact that this alien thing has, you know, turned everything against me and is going to then wipe out all of society or all of humanity worldwide when it all gets duplicated. I dug it. I dug it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. It was a good story. And yet...
And yes,
Moreski. His resource management that he puts us through is it's not just the sleep, which frankly I could deal with. It was the food, which I had like restart the game once because I just, you know, you run out of food, and so then you have to redo the first half of the game optimizing moves so that and not eating until like you're practically fainting from lack of food.
No, I often do the kind of my gameplay style always is to do a thing, then figure out, okay, that's how you do it fastest, and then I restore and I do it. So I'm always kind of optimizing anyway. And yet I find it annoying when I'm optimizing because I have to versus because I want to. And you really are just so time limited because of the food in this. It's just like, oh, I agree. Like the sleep really doesn't bother me, and sleep in a game can be a thing to make you, you separate a game into sections or have dreams, or whatever. It's like in the Enchanter games, the sleep is handled, I think, in a way that doesn't bug me at all. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of gives you chapters where you get a dream and it unlocks the next section. And I kind of like the way that's done. Here is just like an annoyance, and the inventory management is a serious annoyance.
Yes.
So I don't like that.
Right. But also I kept using up things. There's the drill that only works reliably once.
Right.
There's the ID card, which we talked about, which you can scramble.
That you can corrupt
somehow.
You can scramble, exactly.
The official way you can scramble it is by carrying it and the magnetic boots at the same time. I also think you can scramble it by putting it into the machine before you turn the machine on. I think
that, oh.
That's what I thought, at least.
I did it because of the boots.
Yeah. There's this,
which seemed fair to me. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I should be thinking in terms of 1980s and magnetic media and blah, blah. So that seemed like, I mean, annoying, but totally seemed, I'm like, yeah, okay, get it. Yeah. I scrambled fair. It. My fault. Yeah. We're all good. I'm going to die on the spaceship. I'm going to die because of these boots.
There's the spray can of spores that can run out before you need it to.
There's the detonation stuff or whatever that will off gas into nothing.
Yes. Which I thought was,
even if you seal it up, though, in the, like, anyway, it just bugs me.
Yeah, well, okay, that one I kind of like, because there's the little puzzle of using the thermos to put the explosive into there, and I thought it was kind of fun.
I mean, I liked the use of the, yes, I like that. I just don't like things where it's like, oh, you've got it, now you've only got it for a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, from the very beginning, I've been bothered by light sources. Like, oh, well, the light's going to run out. It's just, I guess I just want infinite everything.
Sure.
Welcome to my demographic.
I lost the drill once because of inventory management, and I had to go back because I literally didn't.
Like, you lost it because you didn't know where it was?
I just put it down because I needed to carry something else, or I accidentally dropped it and didn't notice it, and yeah, so I just like, oh, I
need. And then who knows where it is?
Yeah, right, yeah, literally.
Because it's not like you have enough time to just walk around looking for stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I wrote down the explosive turning into a off-gassing or whatever it's called too early. I had one really dramatic, unintentionally dramatic part of the game.
Ooh, what's
where
that?
Where I had set up the explosive. I had gotten into the right room.
Okay, so this is like at the end game then?
No, is this the end with getting the thing out of the safe? That's not in the end game.
Oh, no, okay. Yeah. Oh, no, I understand. Okay, yeah.
Drilled the hole in the safe, and I had put the explosive into the safe, and I had already attached the explosive to the detonator and the detonator to the timer, and I had set the timer. I had forgotten to switch out the bad part inside the detonator.
Oh!
So, one, the timer's going. Two, the explosive is turning into gas.
You haven't replaced the thingy or whatever inside the detonator.
So this is like one of the really time constraint parts of the thing. And I was just like, and I just didn't want to go back and, find my.
So now you're like, okay, race against time.
I set the timer to 60. You know, open thing, take out bad part, put in good part, close the thing.
To make it more interesting.
just to make it like even more stressful than it was.
Plays on Expert Plus.
What's that?
You play on Expert Plus level. Yeah. I can make this even more difficult.
Yeah.
Because like way back when you get the detonator, you can replace it like way earlier down on level 2 or whatever.
Sure.
That's funny.
No, I had forgotten to do it. Because this game, the puzzles are very intertwined where you have to do a thing before you do the next.
Yeah, that is true. Absolutely. Because I was okay with it because it feels like a plot oriented game. It feels like we're going through a movie here versus like those art games are kind of like you're in a dungeon. Here's 18 puzzles you can do. Feel free to do them in whatever order and just bring all your stuff back to the trophy room when you get them.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of short stories essentially. And this feels more like we start at point A, we're going to point B, and we're going to journey through this thing. He's leading us to a story. So I kind of like it better when that is the case, actually. I enjoy going through the interactive fictionness of it. Mm-hmm. And when the plots are that integrated, or the puzzles are that integrated in the plot, it feels more like an interactive story to me.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It was very puzzle-wise. Like, the map was not linear, but the puzzles were.
Were
linear.
And they were kind of all over the place. So, but it is, you're going to do this, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're running from place to place, you know, doing the things in the right order.
You're going to eat some goo. What's with both these games about eating goo? You're always eating goo. You will be eaten by goo. You will be eaten the goo.
Let's see what else. I felt at the beginning, this is one of the things you're trying to figure out, like what the game is at the beginning. There's a machine with lights on it that indicate that things are broken, and in Planetfall, like that's pretty much the job is to fix the
something.
Yeah, because you're going up to that section and you see these lights and go down to the machine, right. get the bit you want, go back right. up.
You've
and
gotta,
yeah, the
you've
lights,
gotta
are, lights are guiding
turn the,
you through
turn
it.
The lights green, fix the broken things. And so when I found a machine with lights indicating that things are broken, I'm like, oh.
You think, oh, I guess I have to fix
right, this.
This
is a sequel. Yeah. It's going to be, that's the mechanic. And I thought that was a,
and it's not.
A very nice
it's a
little red herring.
100%
actually.
Not.
That's not what
right?
you're doing. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good red herring. I had the exact same experience now that you say that. Totally. You think, oh, I'm doing what I did in the first game. First game was, here are the lights, do this. I'm going to fix this place and bring everyone back to life. I'm going to be the hero in that way. And that is not what's going to happen here. That is not what you're going to do. You're instead going to find the glowing pyramid of weirdness and kill your friend.
Right.
Did you ever see the movie Vibes?
No.
With Cyndi Lauper and Jeff Goldblum?
No, it sounds lovely, though.
I love that movie so
Vibes,
much.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like I'm the only person who's ever seen it. So it's...
Is it good or just...
It's great. Oh, my gosh. like, so now, again, I might be the only person who thinks that. It's like, but it's got Peter Falk, Jeff Goldblum, Cyndi Lauper. Cyndi Lauper plays a psychic. So she's got like a psychic friend. Jeff Goldblum plays a person who can... tell things about objects by touching them. That's how, so you touch a spoon and know who ate it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to find this room of gold in South America. And it's hilarious and ridiculous. And it's a movie from the lady, I think it's 87 or 88, and there was a writer's strike. And one of the fun things about the movie is they were filming it kind of in order and they got halfway through and they lost the right to use the script because of the writer's strike. So they had this stuff, they did a whole negotiation with the union and they could use the parts they filmed, but they couldn't continue. So then they had to bring on somebody else to come up with a different ending. So they're going through this whole movie and for three quarters of it, you're in South America looking for the room of gold. And then suddenly it's an alien pyramid thing instead. And so when I'm playing this game and there's weird alien pyramid, I'm like, oh, it's Vibes. I love Vibes. Vibes is it's one of those movies where if you like it, you can quote it all the time. Mm. Like I love a quotable movie
sure.
and Vibes is like wickedly quotable. Maybe the body bounced, bounced over the wall. Anyway, it's just, if you love it, you love it. And I love the movie Vibes. It's awesome. Anyway, the glowing pyramid in this just made me think Vibes. I'm like, oh, I wonder if Steve got partway through and realized, instead of a virus, what if it's a glowing alien pyramid? So in my mind, because that's a 1988 movie, in my mind, Steve Moretzky was the person who rewrote the end of Vibes.
Scab.
So I've got a theory about the end of this game the same way I have a theory about
okay.
the first one.
Cool.
I have all these Steve Moretzky conspiracy theories.
Sorry, I didn't ask him about that when I interviewed him at GitHub.
You really should have. Yeah. He would have been, you're on to me. That's totally where I got this from. Anyway, highly recommended movie.
So we talked about the fairness of the puzzles. And
we did indeed. And you said they were unfair because you're too weak.
I am. No, I thought they were mostly fair, and I felt smart when I figured out.
Oh, but you said there was one that you thought was unfair.
I thought
though.
The thing with an item gets stuck in the vending machine. You pay for it. It comes out of the vending machine, but it gets stuck in the mechanics of the vending machine, and you can't
right.
reach into it. And so you have to fool an ostrich into reaching.
Well, yeah, the ostrich from the beginning. So you've got the floating balloon animal
yeah.
per thing or whatever, and you've got your ostrich
yeah.
To get the timer or whatever.
Right, right. So I like the
right.
ostrich, and he was fun and everything. But having just the idea of having the ostrich have to get the thing out of the machine for you because it had a long neck. That's the one that I was just like, felt like it was silly. It was not something that I would have ever gotten without the clues. Did you get it? Did you figure it out?
It was a while ago, but I think I had to look it up. So
yeah.
It's like my memory is, I think I cheated on that. I think I cheated on more than just that, to be honest.
Oh, no, I definitely cheated on that, but that was the one that I
okay,
felt.
So that, okay, so that's bringing back memories now, because I don't think you didn't learn a word in this, but I think I did, because it kept talking about the ostrich nip. Was that a new phrase for you?
Yes, that was.
Okay, so like to me, that was new, and so... So I think I learned a word in this, like the idea of a nip.
I just kind of assumed it was like you take a nip of alcohol, or I just figured it was something the ostrich wanted that would make him
ostrich treat.
But I never heard it used that way. Like, you've got the thing. You've got the, give the ostrich the nip. And so it's just, it was weird to me. So now that I'm remembering it, okay, there's the ostrich nip. But I remember, yeah, having to get the with the coin or whatever. So yeah, I'm pretty sure I looked that up. Up at the time, I don't remember thinking that it's unfair. But just that, like, oh, I can't figure it out, so give me the answer.
Right.
Maybe I hold myself to a lower standard than you do.
Perhaps. I see several definitions of nip. Nothing like that.
But this whole game, like, that was the thing that was new to me.
Yeah.
Is you got to get the ostrich nip, and you got to give the nip to the ostrich.
Right, and the nip, I mean, the ostrich wants the nip, and he
because then you put the nip in the hole, and the ostrich goes in for that, and you get your thing.
Yeah, yeah. The other animal, the balloon animal, I thought was really funny. It moves around by farting, basically. It literally says he farts himself into the next room. So kind of a balloon shaped monkey sort of ape deal. Monkey's not an ape, but you know what I mean. But he won't go. He's filled with hydrogen, so he won't go into the room if there's a flame in there. And there's a flame in one room, which is, of course, the room you need him to go into, and he won't go in there because there's a flame, so you have to figure out how to turn off the flame, and then you can come in there, and you can kill him in various ways by popping him, and that's fun.
Yep. There's a movie... Oh, it's bugging me now, and everyone is going to know it.
You should have a movie podcast, Carrington.
I used to have a movie podcast. I got many podcasts. I got all the podcasts. Mm-hmm. What is the movie, the space movie...
Spaceballs.
Where there's the balloon alien.
Space movie with
a balloon. They're trapped on the... Oh my gosh. How can I be blanking on this? They're trapped on a spaceship that's got a bomb that's going to go off. It's a smart bomb, and they have to talk to the bomb and say, hey, bomb, don't blow yourself up, bomb. And at the very end, the guy rides the bomb down. And there's this alien in it who's basically a balloon. And so I figured that must be what this is from.
Huh.
Now I can't remember.
Right.
He talks to our audience is now screaming at their headphones.
Yeah. Let them enjoy it.
Let them enjoy the screen. Enjoy the screen.
Guys, listen, people, you're in your car. Finally, you're driving to work. Maybe
it's 2050. You're listening to this podcast.
And something in the future. You're yelling at Kay and Carrington, who could be dead by now. You don't know. It's been so long.
Boy, Moreski, went dark.
The pandemic is over. You are free to travel and go to work. There's a vaccine that everyone has taken, and the world is better. And your biggest problem, frankly, is that we can't remember the name of a movie.
It's by Peter. It's a John Carpenter film.
Yeah,
it's from the 70s.
Yeah,
they're in a spaceship.
I'm thinking of a different movie. You said ride the bomb down.
You think Doctor Strangelove, right? When I said that, No, it's 70s, mid 70s, so 73, 74, something like that. John Carpenter film. Oh my gosh! It stars nobody who's even remotely famous, except Nick Castle's.
I have not seen this alien movie. You watch a lot of weird movies.
I watch a lot of movies. Dark Star. I knew it would bubble up if I started saying enough words that related to it. Dark Star. Everybody should watch Dark Star. Vibes and Dark Star, double feature from me to you, baby. From license plate Gary, scratch, 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 Gary. I say the book version is good too. But so it's a film. It's a sci-fi comedy. Takes place in a spaceship with a bunch of people who go around blowing up stuff on purpose. But then a bomb malfunctions. It's like the smart bomb, and they have to convince the bomb not to blow up, and have to like kind of have a philosophical talk to the bomb. Hey, bomb, you don't want to blow yourself up yet. Like, you don't want to do that, bomb. You're still strapped to us. And the bomb's like, but my reason to exist is to blow up. You know, I gotta blow up. It's like, no, bomb, you're still attached to the ship, bomb. Don't do it. And then there's one person who's like frozen, and they have to like de-thaw him in little bits to be able to talk. Anyway, it's good. It's funny. It's dark. It's weird. It's relatively low budget for a Carpenter film, and worth seeing. So, and I clearly influenced this game too. So,
because of a balloon animal.
Well, because if you have a space thing on a spaceship that gets creepy and trying to kill you, and there's a balloon alien, it's Dark Star. So
okay, if you say so.
Not fooling me, Moreski. I've seen everything.
Let's see. Cheats. I need help with locations of the food because I really needed some food, but it turns out I was just eating it too fast.
Too fast. I did the exact same thing. I kept thinking there must be a lot more food.
Yeah.
But it turns out, no, you just have barely enough food to do 15 moves in this game. Just go optimize.
Because in Planetfall, they're really, you can get unlimited
food. There was basically unlimited food. There was a way to get unlimited food in Planetfall. And as far as I know, there isn't a way to get unlimited food in this. Otherwise, if there is, then I'm disappointed. So don't even tell me because... Yeah. I had optimized like crazy because I couldn't find a way to get unlimited food.
I needed like hints that you have to drill the safe because it seemed like there was a lot of stuff locked in things. I mean, there was there's the key in the safe, and then there was the gardening box up in the dome.
Right.
And it was just like, you know, do you need the key? And there was another thing, I don't remember now, a lockbox that you, one of those things you literally just shoot with a gun. To get in.
Floyd?
Yeah, that too. Another one you have to blow up with the explosive, and another one you literally just need the key. So I kind of needed help, but just like it seemed kind of arbitrary, like the different ways to get into different things. So I needed help with we have to drill the safe. Okay, you know, fine. The ostrich thing I talked about.
Yep.
The fact that the diode was kind of hidden in the chapel in the blinking star.
Right, we're going to use the balloon animal for that one.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So. And that's where you get the thing for the detonator.
The thing.
Which you could use when you get the detonator.
Right.
But you decide to make it more difficult.
Yes.
Said, I got this.
Oh, I got the thing. I didn't install the thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And some weird locations. Like there's a pawn shop and there's a casino and like... It's interestingly a full space station.
Yes.
Like it's like, not just like office. Yeah, office. No, it's like here's other stuff.
Opium den and
yep, yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's an armory and yes, there's the stuff you would normally think of as space station things, but the fact that it's got a pawn shop and stuff is nicely filled out. Like there's a village in this place. So
right.
I dig it. I dig the setting.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing with Floyd. Can we talk about Floyd? What happens to Floyd? So
I'll tell you what happens to Floyd. Yeah. I shoot Floyd. I kill Floyd. So Floyd.
Okay, so everybody except for Carrington knew about Floyd's shocking death in Planetfall. But then I felt...
Are we allowed to say that? I guess, you know what? If you come this far, too bad, folks. Yes,
everybody
Floyd dies
knew.
In Planetfall.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you want to...
Well, I'm just worried maybe people get this far in this but haven't played Planetfall.
No.
Sorry, okay.
I apologize to you if that's.
But Floyd
case.
Dies, but then comes back.
But then comes
it's
back.
What we call a Disney death or whatever. It's like Floyd's dead, totally dead. Come back, and it's like, no, I'm back. I'm totally fine. It's all good. Let's play a game, yo-yos and
but
whatever.
Then, but
so.
Then the but his death in this game when you the
shoot
player
him,
have
like,
to shoot him, I genuinely found that shocking and thought that can't be the best ending. You know, there's got to be like you can it'll let you do it, but that's not how you win the game. But
yes,
that's how you win the
that
game.
There'd be a way to win with 100 points
right.
or whatever because you get through this. And it's, I even wrote down like what happens. In my notes, I've got in all caps, is Floyd going to kill me in this game? And then my next one, Floyd is definitely going to kill me in this game. But then later on, I'm like, oh my God, I have to kill Floyd. Like, and so, because it's Floyd returns with an eye patch. I call him Pirate Floyd. It says, Floyd is standing between you and the pyramid, his face so contorted by hate as to be almost unrecognizable. You also wonder where he picked up that black eye patch. Like, which is kind of funny because it's like, little Floyd's now got an eye patch. And he's like, I'm going to kill everyone. I'm like, Floyd's got an eye patch. Might as well have a tattoo. Like, it's such a weird thing. But you kill Floyd and it's really affecting because like I've been through so much with Floyd and he's like little Floyd and then you shoot him and he's dead and then it undercuts it completely and almost immediately because of Oliver. But it says, so this is after I've blown away Floyd, like get out of my way Floyd, I'm just zap Floyd. Still dazed, you crawl over to Floyd, lying in a smoking heap near the blackened pedestal. Damaged beyond any conceivable repairs, that's interesting, his half-open eyes, he half-opens his eyes and looks up at you for the last time. Floyd, sorry for the way he acted. Floyd knows you did what you had to do. Wincing in pain, he slowly reaches over to touch your hand. One last game of hider and seeker, you be it. Ollie, Ollie, his voice grows weaker. Oxen, his eyes close. free. His hand slips away from yours and he slumps backwards, lifeless. One of his compartments falls open and Floyd's favorite paddleball set drops to the deck. It's like... it's so heart-wrenching. But then it's immediately like basically Oliver now comes up. Oh, I'm good. Let's go play. I'm like, I don't want cousin Oliver to come and be my Floyd replacement.
Right.
So I don't like the Oliver-ness at the end of this thing. But it's sad. You kill Floyd and it's like his little paddleball falls and he's not coming back at the end of this one because of me.
Yeah.
And you still get full points.
Yep, full points. In fact, you have to. You have to do it. If you
want we had somebody... Oh, sorry, listener, I can't remember who it was, but I remember loving the email because they wrote in to say that the ending of Planetfall is dark, but it's not the darkest ending. The darkest ending is if you just don't reopen the door for Floyd. Remember when Floyd goes in the room that he's going to get all zapped and killed
for?
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
He comes, you just, open up and let him in. You just don't open it. Just watch him die in there. I'm like, you are a dark monster. It was awesome, though. So anyway, Floyd's dead.
Floyd's dead.
And I guess we're supposed to accept Oliver as a replacement for Floyd, but I say no thank you, no thank you.
Right. What do you think happens afterwards? Does this
Jeff Goldblum and Cyndi Lauper live happily forever after?
Does this guy just like take another small career advancement and in the next one he's, you know, shuffling more papers or moves on to, I don't know.
No, see, first he shuffles mops or whatever, right, and he's got to shuffle papers. Next one, he's going to have the soft shoe. He's going to become a dancer. He's going to shuffle his feet.
Oh, okay.
And,
sure,
and just give the old soft shoe. And then he'll fall asleep and get executed for it. Yes, you wonder why the person now is now first saves an entire planet and it says, no, I'd rather just, you know, be a paper pusher. Yeah. And now saves literally all of humanity, mm-hmm, because the Zedak pyramid is going to duplicate itself,
right,
and spread the world and destroy everything. So it's the end of all of humanity throughout the whole universe, yep, and stops that. And probably will take just like an extra 1 hour holiday because of it.
He'll move up to middle management position or something.
you play a modest person and a Floyd killer.
Right.
And that is the end of the game.
That's it. I liked it.
You blow away. The fact that like your second last move is you shoot Floyd, mm-hmm, and then you read all this stuff, and like basically that's the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked it.
I liked it a lot too. I like the setting. I like his writing. I think Moreschi is a really good game maker.
Yes.
Like, I think this is a person who knows how to make a game that'll be interesting and have some neat puzzles, but really be plot oriented. I was gripped by it. It's hard. So, and you don't want Infocom games to necessarily be easy things. So it delivers the hard. Sometimes in ways that I don't like the whole food things or whatever.
Yeah.
But overall, Planetfall and Stationfall are both great games that I'm really glad I played. Like they are like iconic Infocom. Like what you think of as an Infocom game. A difficult, cool, interactive fiction thing, mm-hmm, with lots of humor and a story and elements that you're going to just remember after the fact.
Right. But like you said,
it delivers on all fronts.
But like you said, Stationfall's kind of a sleeper. I mean, people don't know about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, though, because I think I liked it just as much as I like Planetfall. I think I did. Yeah, I totally did. It seems like a bigger, harder version. I don't think it's necessarily like... maybe it's not better, but I really liked it. And I liked it a lot better than some of the other Infocom games we played. So I'm surprised more people don't talk about it. Maybe it's too hard and nobody finished it but us. It's weird that nobody speaks about this game. Nobody speaks of this game. But I dig it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I played it.
Yeah. Me too.
I think that's all I got.
Me too.
I can put on my patch now. My eye patch. It should have come with an eye patch.
It should have, yeah.
It would also...
I'm surprised that you have an eye patch. Carantino, you're here to kill me?
I am indeed. Yeah. Got two more episodes, and then I'm taking it. So I guess that's it?
That's it.
Let's wrap it up then. This has been Eaten by a Grew, the Infocom podcast. You can send this email if you want it to be read on the show or mocked. Grew.
Technically, it's MC Frontalot's job to wrap it up.
Oh, nicely done. Send us email, grew@monsterfeet.com, or hit us up on Twitter. He is at KSavitz. I am at Carrington. And if you want to help other people find the podcast, we would appreciate it if you'd give us a nice review or note or something on iTunes. And the show notes and such can be found on monsterfeet.com. And thanks to MC Frontalot for, I got to come up with a better pun than you just did, for being the pink to our Floyd and letting us use his song as our theme tune. I can always dig deeper. Next up, we're going to play Wishbringer, which may or may not have a glowing stone in the box.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for podcasting with me.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
I'm going to kill all your robots now.
Oh, damn it.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
Pew, pew, pew. That's me killing your robots with my pew-pews. My very effective pew-pews.
You're a better shot than I am.
Well, that's why there's multiple pews.
Oh, I see.
Can't just do a pew. I gotta go a pew-pew-pew.
I see. What if my robots are in a church sitting on pews?
Then I'll be like, pew, 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 pew. 1 thought there was going to be a pun in it, though, with the whole boots thing, because it's like a magnetic media, and the boots have killed it, so it can't boot. It's like a floppy thing. I'm like, there's a 1980s joke in here somewhere. Why isn't Steve Metzke doing it? We got boots that can't boot. And like, but it doesn't.
Look for that pun on the next episode of Eaten by a Gru. We'll think of it by then.